propelled you?
Yeah. And I mean, like, so comparing to what I do now to what I did when I started here in DC 8 years ago, I mean, it's nice because my job allows me to be a bit more, for lack of a better phrase, voicey. Like, mm-hmm. I'm allowed to kind of use what I already know from the years of experience I have to tell things in a way that is different from what you would read in, like, the Wall Street Journal or mm-hmm. the New York Times. And I work with editors who appreciate that and, like, want me to write like that.
Can you actually say that's something that I think is distinct about journalism? I mean, maybe not. I think a literary journal might also say that it has a collective voice. But say more about what we talk in the news industry. Even, you know, I run a small niche news site. Our newsroom talks about what is a technically voice. You know, what does that mean when we talk about a news organization's voice or something that we do mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when you're reading a New York Times story or a New York Times headline for that matter, like, you know, it's a New York Times headline just because of the way that they phrase things, because of the way that they construct things. Like, they're known for the fact that they use like a clause before they get to the main point of a headline, which you won't see most other news organizations use. And like at USA Today, I don't know exactly what our motto is, but it's like smart and colorful. And like, that's kind of how we envision the way that we share news with like our audience. Right. And under that guise, I'm allowed to be a bit more playful than I would be at other jobs that mm-hmm. I've experienced at other jobs.
It was like this paper developed at a scale that blended some tabloid influence with the standard bearers of broadsheets. Like, that is what defined the USA Today's rise of being at like such an enormous scale. So I think that maybe is an interesting point about how journalists, when you grew up in any news organization, small, you know, because regional metro dailies would talk about its voice. You know that there's, you know, an opinion editor or news editor at any newspaper or TV station or like that would talk about the voice and approach they might have. They could be owned by a newspaper chain that might influence what that voice is or can be. Could you talk a little bit about the elements that make up any news organization's voice, you know, things like style guide, things like, and what folks in other media might not know is a really big engine for what the writing process or the rules that you can, you know, take on.
Sure. So, and I think a lot of it comes down to the breakdown of your newsroom, right? So your editorial board is going to have a completely different voice from your newsroom, like mm-hmm. the reporters and the writers. But then within that, like at least USA Today, we have all of the different desks. So what I am writing for the politics team is more playful than what my coworkers are probably writing. But then I'm probably not writing the same things that our sports team is writing. I'm not approaching stories in the same way that they are necessarily. Same thing with our life team. Definitely not anything like our money team mm-hmm. or like our breaking news team. Everyone has a different process. But when it comes down to it, I think that we generally aim for, I don't know, just something that brings life to the stories in a different way than you will see other places. Mm-hmm. That's what we're known for.
Mm. Can
I think? Yeah. I think the best example that I've gotten, and it's because USA Today actually like celebrated its 35th anniversary last year. Yeah, 35. Was if you take a look at the front page of USA Today from its very first edition, the top story is Grace Kelly dying. And like, but other newspapers from that day, if you were to compare them, they didn't do that. Mm-hmm. That they're not the kind of, they weren't the kind of organizations that would splay out Grace Kelly died in a car accident. Mm-hmm. Like, there was some other bigger policy thing happening. And it's on the front page for USA Today, but it's like right. on the bottom third.
Right.
And I think that that kind of idea has actually continued throughout the organization's history, where we care more about what the audience wants than, I don't want to say other places, but just that is our priority, is what will people be interested in.
And I think it's easy to forget what a generation or almost two ago that USA Today, its history is partly shaking what some of the rules were for a big at-scale national newspaper could do. And that is, again, somewhat similar to, I think, you know, literary journals or others that, like, standard bearers of any individual writing form can kind of collectively shake what the rules are. But I feel like it's almost done more organizationally in journalism. We're more structured around the organization than the individual. Like, yeah, they're freelance writers. Yes, they're individual columnists. Yes, there are now in our era, you know, reporters can go out on their own and have voice-driven blogs or use social. Like, yes, they drive voice, but it still seems like a lot of the work is done by the organizations, which ties me to the last kind of, like, more journalism-specific thing before I want to get into a bit more of the writing weeds in our last third here of our conversation, is I think it'd be remiss in any of my journalism conversations, particularly in the era we are in, to not draw, like, a clear red hard line in the relationship to truth that in the media literacy space right now that we're trying to get really good at reminding people that, you know, creative nonfiction is a beautiful and important writing movement about interspersing fact and personal narrative are, you know, really telling. We've had really interesting conversations about how close to the truth different types of writing forms have to be and storytelling forms. But journalism, if you define yourself as that, however, and I'd be interested maybe for your own, like, definition of journalism, I want you to talk a little bit about how important it is to you that you get something right as someone who is a professional and one of the young rising stars across the country in journalism. This isn't a trivial matter to you, and those who are not in journalism, I think I'm surprised how often they miss how not funny it is about fact and truth in what you tell, and that how much that trumps form and voice and headline writing and not. So I wonder if you could just take a little bit about what's your relationship to, you know, getting the truth right, and has it ever changed how you're going to write something when something came in late or you were reporting on something and you thought you had your lead or you thought you had your narrative and oh, you're like, shit, this is a lot less, this is not the story I want, but it's truth. Just, can you talk a little bit about truth?
Yeah, I mean, so we're currently living in a time when you're constantly hearing, not just from politicians, but from readers and from friends and from...
Right.
Other journalists, fake news. Like, everyone is shouting this term, fake news. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to reconcile that because most journalists I know, they strive to tell the truth. They strive to be factual in the work that they do. And, I mean, we issue corrections immediately when we get something wrong. And we think about, and we have debates in, like, the newsroom and of, well, okay, so what is... true if, like, one person saying what, like, he said, she said in the mm-hmm. middle of, like, the Me Too movement
mm-hmm.
or what happens when the White House says something and then the president completely derails that by saying the opposite thing in his mm-hmm. Twitter feed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that we are still grappling with, but at the end of the day, most people, like, facts are facts and journalists report the facts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of an example when that has, like, I can't think of, like, one right off the top of my head,
right.
But, you know, I mean, I have 100% gotten a phone call where this is not right and you need to fix this right away. And I'm always like, I'm so sorry. Let me fix that. I will get this done immediately. Actually, no, I just thought of an example, and it actually has nothing to do with the written word, which is mm. funny, but so, like, I thought I had cropped a photo properly and, like, dropped it into a post I wrote about a Supreme Court judge in Ohio, and it did not crop properly, so the wrong judge's face was showing up, and so I got a panic call from, like, the Ohio Supreme Court on, like, a Friday night.
Right.
To say, this is wrong and you're showing, like, the wrong person. And, like, even though it was, like, something, it was a glitch in the system, but I had my minor panic attack and
right.
then I went and I fixed it and I apologized profusely to the judge and to his spokesperson. And, like, stuff like that happens all the time because journalists are human too. That's kind of the point I always try to make whenever readers are mad at me for what either they view as wrong, which isn't always the case, or if they view something as biased, which I disagree with, but I'm like...
And the intent is... you're a person. And the intent part I just think is so worthwhile, and again, this is not a journalism podcast, but it's too close to my heart to not take any opportunity that I can to convey how much I've never met anyone that is, you know, we ostracize those in our field who deviate from that norm. It's not a trivial matter. I kind of believe that your Friday night, it wasn't trivial when I've gotten things wrong. It's not something that I just, well, you know, happened. That is a bone-crushing reality, particularly if you put someone, you know, depending on what the situation is, if you impact someone else. So that's clearly important. I wanted to hit home on that point. I want you to share a bit more before we're going to close out by having you read something you've done and get into the real weeds to go out. But I wonder if, like, leading into that, you could talk a little bit about process, and it could be the story that we're about to dive into, or it could be even another one about something that you just liked about. Give us, like, what is it really like? Either something that did get pitched to you, or something that you found on your own, or, you know, breaking news that you were thrown onto, whatever you think might be interesting. Because then after that, I actually want to talk about the different journalism forms a little bit, and then get into your example. So what kind of, just walk me through any example of a story you might have done recently or otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I think of myself as a feature writer. I think that's, like, my strongest suit. That's always been what I've been the best at.
And can we even, like, quick define, because I was going to do that after, but it might make sense more. Give me, like, a little of the big buckets of what the heck does it mean? We define things like...
So you have just your typical, I think I already talked about, like, the inverted pyramid. So that will probably be almost most journalism stories that anyone will read in a newspaper.
So what's a feature? What does it actually
mean? And a feature is more so, like, that could be a profile, that can be a story about an event that they want to tell in a different way, that can be some sort of magazine feature that you're reading. Like, it has a big definition. There's a lot that falls into that bucket.
And characteristic shooting, it doesn't mean that it's less true.
Right.
It just might mean that it's not necessarily about a breaking news thing or a specific thing. These can be trends, which are almost its own category, but it's like it's pulled out some, I suppose, might be one way that I would describe a feature.
I think that's fair.
So feature's a thing. What's in breaking news? Breaking news often means a thing that happened without planning.
Right. Exactly. So.
But you also can break an earthquake. But you can break stuff.
Yeah.
As a reporter is a verb we use a ton. You broke that. What does it mean when you broke that? And that's, like, a big thing that we talk about.
That means that you got the story first. So whatever that story may be, whether that's, like, in politics, a lot of it happens like, oh, so-and-so said this first. Mm-hmm. So that's what I deal with a lot. But then you can also, like, for the life section, it might be that this person is going to be in this movie, or this is the latest from this tour stuff. And then money-wise, that's, here's what happened on, like, the stock markets today. It really varies depending on which desk you are. Sports, you know. So, I mean, your typical sports story. A gamer.
Right, which is the story of the details of what actually happened, and which the web is changing even what a game story is, where, you know, obviously even longer back before you had SportsCenter, a game story was a defining way you understood what happened if you didn't listen to the radio, but then it became important if you wanted more than the clips. But now the web is, you know, you can read live tweets. Like, so it's interesting how technology shapes us maybe more than other writing forms, has really changed our form perhaps more in the last 20 years than you know, the previous 120 years probably. But so, okay, let's just go, like, walk me through a couple minutes of an example. So a breaking news thing, you do that at a very national level. What is the actual experience like? You're in the newsroom working on maybe something else, and what might happen or what has happened recently that you're like, oh, breaking news,